Welcome to the Shoulder Buttons Podcast, featuring Adam, the game machine.
I thought he was just some freak and wouldn't shut up.
Also, co-host, Jose, a vicious koala.
Pokemon was the pokey of the man in the thing where the guy comes out of the thing and he likes to fall off.
Oh yeah, get your asses on that controller, because it starts now!
Hello everybody, welcome to the very first episode of the Shoulder Buttons Podcast. My name is Adam, we're here to talk about games, the gaming community at large, barking dogs, I mean, we got it all here. And what would be a great podcast be without another co-host? I mean, I know I'm awesome, but we got the wonderful, the talented Jose from wouldyoukindly.com. What's that?
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were going to say the town that I live in. So I was going to go Los Angeles. Yeah.
Los Angeles.
But yeah, you are right. I write for wouldyoukindly.com. I currently do the news there on a very blue moon. You might do
blue balls?
A few. Yeah, almost like blue balls, but they happen very less often than my reviews.
Well, we hope to hear some reviews. Actually, we're going to have a segment where we talk about reviews, but we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. But, yeah, let's just go ahead and get started. Tell the people about you. Tell the people who you are and what the hell it is you do.
Well, as you start off, I say, my name's Jose. You can find me on the internet by just looking up A Vicious Koala, and I've been going by that name for almost 2 years now. It's just one of the many... I'm sorry?
Where did that name come from? I saw that on your Twitter. I'm just like, did he get bit by a rabid koala and get koala powers? Or
no, actually, I've always had my thing is always to have my own site. That's always been my dream. But the hardest thing for me was always coming up with a name. And it took me forever to just come up with something. And one day I sat myself down and I said, I'm just going to do whatever comes to mind first. And I just thought of pandas, but everyone does pandas. So I was like, what else can I do? What kind of other animal can I use? And it just kind of hit me. I was like, well, everyone does pandas, and I'm pretty short. I'm 5'1", and the koala is pretty much just a short panda. So I was like, oh, I'm gonna do a koala. And then the first thing that came to my mind was, wait, are koalas vicious or are they nice? So I looked up vicious koala on Google, and I found this picture of a koala just tearing apart an animal and eating it. Yeah, it's the craziest thing, because the koala is just sitting there, and it's its mouth is all bloodied, and I was like, all right, that's perfect. It's a vicious koala. That's what I'm going with.
Well, I'd like to see a metal now. I'd love to see a metal video with a koala in it, just him eating something.
For an entire 3 minutes, just a koala eating an animal.
And then a guy in the background taking his long hair and just doing that, what do you call that, a fan-like effect with his hair, playing guitar.
Turning around. That's all they're doing for the whole 3-minute shoot.
Yeah.
It'd just be even better if it's one continuous 3-minute shoot without any editing in between. It's just start the camera, watch the koala do its thing.
Yeah, sorry, we're not very PETA-friendly, so we have to apologize. Hope my steak is done soon. I wish I had a steak right now.
Yeah, well, I mean, I love animals in general, but I'm not a big PETA fan. But, I mean, getting back to what...
I love eating animals.
I think I love eating animals, too. I think most of our listeners might, except Pseudo. If he's listening, he's probably going to hate us for this.
Oh, really? I didn't know he was hardcore vegan, or...?
No, he's a vegetarian from what I've seen. I don't know if he's a vegan or anything. I'm pretty sure he's just a vegetarian, though.
I see him drink off of a cow's tit once. I'm just kidding. Love you.
But yeah, so I've been doing game writing for a couple of years now. I started back in late 2009, and I've been going back and forth over the years through different sites, mostly doing news and reviews over that time period. I had one site that wanted me to do a video show, and I did a one episode of a gaming history type of show, and then I never did anything again with it. So, I mean, that's just me. I prefer to write. I prefer to sit down and write an article. I mean, I love video content. I love watching video content when it's good, but for the most part, for me doing video content, I'm just not it's not my thing. I prefer to sit down and write. So you'll always find me doing reviews or news or whatever through many different gaming websites. Right now, I strictly only write for Would You Kindly, though.
Well, that's definitely cool. Well, talk more about us. What should people get to know about you? Like, what kind of games do you like? And is there anything unique to you that you would say, like, you have a cool gaming moment or maybe a tattoo or anything? I mean, just anything. Just tell people about your history with gaming, from where you started, and just anything.
The first game I ever remember playing is Super Mario Brothers 2. I was playing it at my cousin's house. I mean, I think we were living with my cousins at the time, and she had a Nintendo, so I would sit down and play it whenever I could. And then I didn't have anything for years and years later until I had a Sega Genesis as a gift. And I played the hell out of that thing for the longest time. And then I got a Game Boy Pocket. And when I got a Game Boy Pocket, I was introduced to what became one of my all-time favorite series ever, and that's Pokemon. Love Pokemon. Like, I know it ends up being the same games over and over again, but whenever a new Pokemon game is announced, if I don't have the current Nintendo system for that game, I will go out and buy it just for that game. And to that extent, last year I actually got a Pikachu tattoo on my arm. So it's the most visible tattoo that I have out of the three that I have, and it's right there in my arm for everyone to see.
Really attracts the ladies, doesn't it?
Oh, it does, it does. All the ladies see it, and they freak out, you know. It's cute Pikachu, cute vicious koala, it works. It just works.
Next, will you get a My Little Pony tramp stamp anytime in the future?
No, my tramp stamp is going to be reserved for, like, the Pokemon logo.
Blastoise. Blastoise.
No, but after the Genesis, I got a PlayStation a while later, and my first game for that was Xena, and surprisingly enough, I found it while I was cleaning today. It was kind of fun to think about, like, those memories, because when I got that PlayStation, I didn't have a memory card for it. So Xena was a game that you needed to save to get through. So I remember sitting down on Saturday morning and starting the game from the very beginning and just playing it as much as I could until one day I just beat it in a full sitting.
Nice.
Yeah, and then after that,
Any good, by the way?
It wasn't any good.
You should go back and play it and see if it was as good as you remember it being.
I don't know if I want to do that, though. Like, I might end up doing it now that I've found the game again, but I just don't think it's going to be as good as I remember it being. But yeah, for a while, I didn't get any games for it, and then I know I'm going to get a lot of hate from the internet for this, but this guy that lived in the apartment buildings that we live in, he told me once that he could mod PlayStation games, just his PlayStations. So he went ahead and he modded mine, and then from then on, it was like an endless supply of free PlayStation 1 games. I'm sorry, internet, please don't kill me. And that was that for a while until in high school, I was growing my hair out, and I had it down to my chin. And my mom really hated the long hair, so she said, "Hey, I'll give you $300 if you cut your hair." And my favorite game has always been Xenogears. I love role playing games. I mean, anything with a story, I love. So I always go towards the RPGs. Right about the time that she told me the $300 thing, Xenosaga had just been announced in the US and it was about to be released. So I went ahead and I pre-ordered Xenosaga before ever buying a PlayStation 2. And once she gave me the money for cutting my hair, all that money went right to a PlayStation 2.
Well, I was on mute or not. I've been muting my mic off and on.
Yeah, you were quiet for a while. I was like, what's going on?
Yeah. I was like, I thought I'd mute and then I unmute. Because, like, I'm trying not, because I got a squeaky chair, so I'm trying not to make too much noise. This is the great thing about the first podcast. We are totally licensed to fuck this whole thing up if we want.
Oh, yeah, no one can hate us for it because it's our first podcast.
It's the internet. They hate you for anything.
Or yeah, that's
for that matter. You know what I mean? I mean, it's just like, you know, someone's going to be like, Pikachu tattoo with girls. Why don't you get a Call of Duty tattoo?
Yeah, exactly.
Why don't you get a sergeant, whatever the fuck the guy's name is from the Modern Warfare? I don't know. But anyways, yeah, that's going to draw hate. You don't fucking know Sergeant McSoapdish, or was it Soapdish? I don't know what it is. Soap something.
I have no idea.
I don't know.
Sergeant McSoapdish. I have a Call of Duty game, and it was given to me by a friend because I needed to test out a peripheral for the PlayStation 3. Mm-hmm. And I had, like, it was a first-person shooter peripheral. Mm-hmm. I had no first-person shooter game. So my friend just goes, oh, well, you know, I got this copy of Call of Duty. Do you want it? And I was like, well, yeah, thank you. And I think I played maybe about an hour's worth of that game and then never touched it again.
Yeah, I know some people rage on that game just so hard.
Yeah, I just can't get into first-person shooters at all. It's just not really my genre.
That's cool.
Yeah, like, I suck at them so badly, too. It's almost sad. I think the only one that I'll ever have an exception for would be Halo.
Gosh, that's one of my favorite FPS games.
Yeah, and it's just something about that game that draws me to it all the time. I mean, when I first bought an Xbox, it was for Halo, and then I bought an Xbox 360 to get, like, the following Halo titles that came out. So, I mean, that's just, like, the one FPS game that I can keep going back to, even though I completely suck. Like, I'm just horrible at that game.
Oh, I suck at FPS games. Like, I like a few of them, but for me, Halo was always my favorite. And I think it's more the memories, but I guess we'll get more into that, I guess, when I start talking about myself a little bit, because, you know, everybody wants to hear about me because I'm the big star.
Why don't you tell us who the hell you are?
Who the hell am I? I don't even know anymore. No. well, my name is Adam. I do YouTube content, not only for my YouTube channel, Transparency Pro, but a little bit for wouldyoukindly.com. That's how me and Jose found ourselves. And where do you want me to start?
Well, tell us a little bit about your favorite games.
Favorite games. Okay, this is going to sound so damn cliche, but I don't care. One of my favorite games of all time. And I say this, and I truly mean this, and this is like the first Final Fantasy VII game I ever played, which sounds kind of realistic. First game, Final Fantasy VII for PlayStation. It's not my first RPG. The first one was Super Mario RPG, but anyway, my favorite, I just love the characters, and I remember back in the day when I got my PlayStation 1, I got Mega Man X4, which I'm a diehard Mega Man fan, Parappa the Rapper, which I did not care for, and Final Fantasy VII.
Going back to Parappa the Rapper for a second, though.
Okay.
Have you played it anytime recently?
No. If I have to kick and punch any more time, I'm going to kick and punch the disc, I swear.
Oh, man, because I remember I had that game, and I didn't like it, and then a few years later, I played it again, and I really enjoyed it the second time around, so I don't know if that might end up being the same thing for you.
Funny thing is, Final Fantasy VII, when I first got it for Christmas, of course, I was more excited about Mega Man X4, because, like, I grew up playing the Mega Man games on the NES, and that, of course, it's like, well, it's not on Nintendo anymore, so I have to get a PlayStation. So I got it, and I said, Final Fantasy VII, I tried it for a little bit, and I guess I got bored at first. I don't know exactly what it was. And then something later on drove me to get into it, and ever since, I was hooked. I mean, I played that game like 3 or 4 different times, just trying to figure out how the story goes. And some people say that, you know, the main character is emotional and whiny. Don't want to get too spoilery, but I mean, if you've been through half the shit the main character has been through, I'd be a little fucked up in the head, too, you know? But I don't know. I just really thought it was an epic story. I've never seen anything like it in a world that, to me, like, solidifies the fact for me that, like, my personal affinity on JRPGs versus Western RPGs, that JRPGs have the settings down pat, that most of them have some unique settings. And some of them are a little bland, but there's quite a few of them that have something that most Western RPGs don't have for me. And, unfortunately, I'm not as, like, I try to get into RPGs nowadays, but I just, for some reason, lose focus, and I'm trying with a certain game I'm playing, but we'll get into that later.
Well, I think the focus thing, especially with JRPGs, is it comes down to just time. Like, we don't have the time that we used to have.
Well, I mean, it's just RPGs in general. Well, for right now, I kind of have a lot of time where I'm on employment at the moment, but yeah, time in general, I mean, like, these things, like, well, just RPGs in general, like Western Japanese, it's like 40, 60 hours or more, you know, and it's just like, you know, if you're going to play in like 2 or 3 hour chunks, I mean, it's going to take you a while to beat a game.
Yeah, and that was the thing too. Like, the first time I played Xenogears, I was on vacation from school, I had nothing to do, and that took me forever to beat. The first time I beat it was 90 hours.
Yeesh.
90 hours. And that's because that was the second time I'd started playing the game. This was back in PlayStation 1 title, so back when, like, the third-party peripherals were all 100% shit. And I had a third-party memory card. And those things were really bad because it would randomly lose data.
Yes.
So, the first time around playing Xenogears, I got halfway through the second disc, which by then was already 60 or 70 hours devoted into the game.
Wow.
I woke up one morning, I turned it on, everything was gone. So then, like, I had to start all over again, and I had the time during that vacation period to just start from the very beginning and completely go through the game again. But I mean, I don't have that time anymore. I would never be able to do that nowadays. Like, it's just, I have so much stuff to do that, like, it's hard. Like, as much as I love RPGs, it's so hard to play them as much now, because it's just very little time for me to be able to, like, sit down and be able to work on it.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, even with, you know, jobs, real life and stuff, I mean, as you get older, and for you younger viewers, like, us whippersnappers don't got the time that you do to dedicate to things, but, like, yeah, I mean, it's definitely a time thing. I find myself playing more stuff that are more quick, like multiplayer games. I kind of find myself playing more of that stuff, like fighting games. Like, fighting games is one of my favorite genres.
Well, it's interesting that you bring up fighting games, because for me, again, I'm not really good with fighting games. I love them to death. I don't play, like, I'm just not that good, because my reaction time is just really horrible. But I love the fighting game community. And I think I've mentioned this to you before. When it comes down to just a community of players, something about the fighting game community has always just attracted me to them, because they're just some of, at least the people that I've had contact with, they are just some of the coolest and most down-to-earth people that I've ever met, and they're all about improving the sport and just getting to know each other and just getting better at the thing you love. So for me, the fighting game community, especially in LA, has always just been my favorite community of all, even though I completely suck at it, and like, I've been out of touch with the fighting game community for a while. When I first started writing back in 2009, things that were picking up in Los Angeles were fighting game tournaments. And one of the first reviews that I ever did was a review for a gaming tournament out here called the Underground Tournament League, which just blew me away because it was more than just a fighting game tournament. It was a social event that had live music, live art, casual video game lounge. There was dollar tacos that were being sold outside of the event. It was just...
Yes. Yeah, Oh my gosh, that's worth the plane ticket to fly out to Los Angeles.
It was great. I mean, at the height of UGTL, they had some of the biggest names in fighting games coming out to participate, even though the pot, from what I remember, the pot was never that huge, but you had people like Gutex, Mike Ross, Star Slayer, just a bunch of, like, named people showing up for the event.
Like, fighting game tournament stuff all the time. It's just unfortunately, like, you're closer to that scene than I am. Where I'm out in Kentucky, like, we don't have anything like that, unfortunately, around here too much. So usually it's either online or maybe a friend or two that might play. I know someone's trying to start something, but I have to get back in contact with them again. But I don't know if I'll ever, like, go into the pro stuff, but I do like watching the pros and what they do. But I guess I could talk about some of my favorite fighting games as well. Like I said, I started out, first game I remember renting. I didn't get to play an arcade because we didn't really have too many arcades. It was mainly like either Pizza Hut had a couple arcade machines, we had a skating ring that had like some old Miss Pac-Man and Galaga and, you know, stuff like that. But we had Mortal Kombat 2 and Darkstalkers come to the Pizza Hut. Like, they would rotate machines every once in a while. I remember Ultimate Mortal Kombat 3. That was pretty fun. I'm not a big MK fan, but because I couldn't figure out how to do any of the damn moves. So, I mean, I remember that one, but, and then that is Darkstalkers, guy. That was kind of cool. But, I remember the first one I really wanted to play because my mother was all about, you know, like, she doesn't want to get me involved in the violence of games, because this was the time, I guess, they were talking a lot about violent games and stuff. And, like, I was like, Street Fighter, I was like, Mom, this one isn't as bad as the other one. You know, because I just wanted to play a fighting game. Like, they just fascinated me. And she let me rent Street Fighter 2, and I really loved it. It was really fun. I sucked terrible at it. I still suck at these games, but I mean, I love them. Even though I'm not great at them, I still love them. I can do the moves. I've learned how to actually do moves instead of button mash, which I kind of find myself hitting buttons sometimes.
That's a great achievement, though.
Yeah. I can do a fireball. Yay, I'm
great. Yeah.
Yes,
no, actually,
MLG,
it's
right?
Funny that you mentioned that.
Yeah.
Because when I had my Sega, my mom had told me I was going to get a new game and I could decide whatever I wanted. We were at my cousin's house, and just as we were about to go leave to purchase the game or purchase a new game, a news segment came on about how gory and how violent the Mortal Kombat games were, and it's just this whole news article or this news like segment on TV about how bad and, you know, how much blood there was in these games, and you shouldn't buy these games for your kids at all. So, as we're leaving, my mom looks at me, she's like, what game did you want to get? And I'm, like, freaking out, because I can't say Mortal Kombat now, because we just saw something on the news about how bad Mortal Kombat was. So I paused for a moment, and I was like, I wanted to get the Aladdin game. And I had no idea that there was an Aladdin game out. So we go out to this game store, and lo and behold, there's an Aladdin game. So I'm like, yay, Aladdin game. And not to like,
I know. I mean, you're a kid,
Aladdin,
right?
I'm
going to go ahead. I'm going to spoil one segment, but I did pick up my kids on the NES. So y'all can say what you want about me after that one. But so
the Aladdin game and the majority of the Disney games for like, the Sega Genesis and Nintendo 64, the majority of those games were really good.
The NES were my favorites. DuckTales 2, Darkwing Duck. I love those games.
Yeah, even to date, I can pick up Aladdin and still have a blast with it. It's just so much fun. So it's funny that I never got that. I didn't get the game at that time, but it was just, you talking about that just reminded me of that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, yeah, they were kids' games, but, I mean, like, I was born in 85, so that was the year NES actually launched in the States. So, I mean, like, I was kind of a late bloomer to it. I remember getting my first system, like, I don't even remember how old I was. I just remember I was, I guess, upset my mother was going to start work, and my dad took me to this electronics shop, and I got Mario Brothers with Duck Hunt, had the orange zapper, and, I mean, I was hooked on that stuff ever since, gaming and stuff. But, yeah, going back to what we were talking about, yeah, like those games, I mean, like, I like those kids' games, because, I mean, they're still fun even today, a lot of them are. I mean, some of them I didn't know better, some of them I was like, oh my gosh, McKids are awesome. I kind of picked that kind of as a nostalgia joke factor, but, I mean, you know, you got the one white kid, black kids, all equality, Michael Jackson music comes out, and we all love and hug each other, But yeah, continue with your story though. I'm really interested in this. So you ended up getting Aladdin.
I ended up getting Aladdin and I played it and I really enjoyed it at the time. And like I said, even today, I can go back and play it and just have so much fun. But I didn't end up getting Mortal Kombat on the Genesis until years and years later. I think by then I had already had my PlayStation 2. Oh, no. It was a few years later, but still, you know, it wasn't, I didn't get it till way later on.
Yeah. Well, that's definitely cool. Let's see. Is there anything else that I should talk about? Anything else I should say about myself?
No, I think we're good.
Okay. All right. I guess I could talk about my YouTube stuff, I guess. Did I talk about that any?
You mentioned it a little bit, but then we got sidetracked, which is probably going to happen a lot.
Okay. I'll just talk real quick. Fast and brief about so we can get on to our main segments, because people are probably tired of hearing me talk about myself as awesome as I am, I know. Well, pretty much, like I said, youtube.com/transparencypro. I do stuff like the Game Machine and other video content. Game Machine is more of my, like, review show and stuff. I've been on YouTube since, like, 08, and I just really love the support of the people that listen to me, and I thank everybody that watches and comments and everything, and people that follow me on Twitter and everything else. Without you guys, I wouldn't be doing this. I really appreciate it. I have fun doing this. I don't make a dime, but you definitely make this much more interesting. And I guess I'll go ahead and talk about, let's start, because I had a friend that asked me about it, like, how do I get started in the videos? And maybe you can go ahead and tell people how you got started with writing for websites. So that way, just in case somebody might want to get into it. But anyways, yeah, so what I did was, like, I just started out, like, of course, the great thing about YouTube, it's free, and anybody can create a video and do it. So what I did was I had, like, this video camera or whatever, and the cool thing about it was I could record footage to a mini DV tape. So I, like, was able to hook it up to my TV and stuff. I was kind of crazy with it. And I was just like, well, let's just do this stupid video or whatever. And it was me and my friend Zach, who you probably see in some of my videos. And we just called it Idiots Playing Mega Man 2. And it was just us just bantering and playing Mega Man 2. Then I did a Mega Man 9 walk Let's Play, and I haven't done a Let's Play in a while. I have an idea for what I want to do in the future, but... and then I decided, like, I want to do my own gaming website. So I started my first review, Gaming Gonads, is what I called it. Yes, I have no idea why I came up with that name. I just thought, oh, nuts, gonads, haha, it's funny. People like it, because it's nuts. So, and then later on I was just like, nah, I need a more serious name, so I just came up with the Game Machine. Ever since then, just been doing reviews and other random content. So if you want to get your start on YouTube, you don't have to have a lot of equipment. You don't have to have a lot of fancy editing. In fact, you know what? I don't even care if you guys, like, film off your TV just starting out or record emulators. Just whatever you can to get your name out there. Eventually, though, I think it would be cool if you guys were able to get something. But it's whatever your style is, whatever you want to do. Just do it. Just get out there, do it, and you will find an audience. Just be yourself. Don't try to imitate. Just be yourself. This is After School Special.
The more you know. You do bring up a good point, though. It's about being yourself and finding your voice within what you want to do. As far as how I started working in writing about video games, back in 2009, I was hanging out with some friends, and we knew mutual friends. It was kind of like I was with my friends, and then there was another set of people there, and we started talking, and then someone asked, so what did you go to school for? And I went to school for journalism, communications, and I was mentioning that, and they asked if I like video games. I said, yeah, I love video games. So my friend at the time goes, well, my friend and I, we're starting our own website, and we need writers, and, you know, if you have experience in, like, communications or journalism, why don't you try talking about video games? And I just went with it. I was like, yeah, why not? I've always wanted to do my own sort of blog, but I never could focus on one topic. So I started writing news for them, and I started doing reviews for them, and I just fell in love with this. Like, I was always trying to figure out what I wanted to do with journalism, like what kind of news I wanted to do. And then when I started playing video games and I started talking about them to an audience, no matter how small it was, I realized that that's what I wanted to do. Like, I want to write about video games, and, you know, and not just video games, but, like, just the geeky subjects that interest me. But I started writing for them, and I did. I was with them for a bit, and then I left the site for various reasons. It just went in different directions that I wasn't a fan of, and since then, in, like, 2010, I did some freelance work for a couple of other sites. And then mostly, like, around halfway of 2010, a little bit of the beginning of 2011, I was kind of on a hiatus. I didn't do anything, but for some reason, people just kind of knew me as, oh, you do video game stuff, you write about video games, and I started getting back into it, and then, sometime last year, I remember my friend Drew, who used to live here in LA, tweeted that Would You Kindly was looking for writers. And I said, well, maybe I should apply for that. And I went ahead and I did, and I didn't hear back from them for a while, and then I finally got, like, the position. So it took me a while to start writing continuously on their site, but I've gotten back into the groove of things, and, you know, I'm just doing, like, mostly, like I said, I do news for them, and on an off occasion, I've written a review for them. So it's really interesting. It just took me a while to, like, get back into the groove of things. And what I tell people, because people always ask me, like, well, how can I do that? And I just tell people, you don't need to, like, go and start writing for a big gaming website right off the bat. You don't need to write for anyone off the bat. You can get a Tumblr. You can get a WordPress account and just write. And what I like to tell people is just write. Just write about the games you like, do a review about your favorite game, no matter how old it is, no matter how long ago it came out, write about it and tell people why you love it. Because as you progress with your writing and your reviews and your news, you will develop your voice, or people will kind of know you as the guy who does that stuff. Like, if you only, like, if you love RPGs and you only write about RPGs, people will know you as, oh, he, you know, if you have something good to say about RPGs, they'll go towards you. And it just takes a while to develop that voice, but you just have to go for it. Just, like I said, get a WordPress account and start writing. And then as you go along and you have enough actual stuff on your site, then you can start just applying for whatever websites start hiring, you know, send them, show them what you're capable of writing, and it'll go from there.
I mean, like, it's kind of almost like how I got my start. I did a little writing for a while myself with Control-Alt-Kill. I was going to try to apply for this one website, but then I met somebody through that forum. They were telling me they were starting a website, Control-Alt-Kill, and I was like, all right. And kind of what they were promising me was a little bit better than what the other site was. So, I mean, not money or anything, just the fact. Anyways, I won't get into that. But anywho, yeah, and just started writing, and we actually eventually got to go to E3. I had to pay my own way to get there, but, you know, E3 2010, and, like, that was an experience and a half, but we won't get into all that. But, yeah, I mean, like what you were saying, you're not going to get on an IGN, you're not going to get on Destructoid or Kotaku right off the bat. I mean, don't expect that. And in fact, don't even expect to get paid for it. Don't expect to make a living out of it unless you're really willing to move, like, out to California or out to New York or wherever. Move out to these places and apply and have, you know, I don't even know if they have to have a, you know, an actual writing degree or a journalism degree. I'm not 100%. Don't expect to make money off of it. You gotta do it for the love. You gotta do it for the passion, first of all, whether you're doing videos, writing, whatever. If you don't do it for the love and the passion of it, I mean, you have no hope for a career in general. And I don't even think I'm gonna make a living off of it. I would love to. But as long as I can still do this as a passion, as a hobby, as something that I can feel like I have an actual purpose in life besides doing a mundane job, I don't know. I feel like I'm satisfied with that.
Yeah, and that's a big thing, too, that everyone should take away from it. Don't do it because you think that's easy money or, you know, you want to get paid for it. Do it because you like to do it. Would I like to get paid for it? Yeah, I'd love to at some point be able to make money off of this. And even ideally someday live off writing. But you can't get into it expecting that that's what you want to do or expecting to get that right off the bat. You have to put some effort into it. You have to put some work into it, and it's going to take a while.
And it'll also take a while to get noticed, too. And I know some people, especially with the YouTube gaming community, and I want to shout out to those people because those are some of the nicest people out there. They'll help you with anything. They're great people out there. But anyways, as far as the community in general, I know some people kind of have the view of like, oh, well, if you're just doing it for views or for money or, you know, I mean, we all want to get views. We all want to get attention. I mean, if we're just doing it pure fact of, oh, well, I'm just making this video because I like it, we don't have to share it. But we decided to share it because we want to share what we care about and our passions with other people. And I think once you find your voice and once you get out there and be yourself and interact with people, I mean, seriously, like, interact with your audience. If you got somebody that's asking you a question about something or if they just want to say what's up, talk to them. Don't be snooty. Don't be holier than thou. Just be yourself and love and respect your audience because that will pay off in the long run.
Definitely. Let's move on. Damn. Let us move on.
Alright, so let's go ahead and talk about what our little segment we'd like to call Game Room. So it's more than just a what are you playing segment. We just talk about things like, you know, well, stuff we played, stuff we bought, something we saw cool in the store, or any kind of like cool gaming news or little, you know, random what's-its on the internet. So I'm going to start with you, Jose, again. I like picking on you, so, because I have no one else.
I've been playing a fun RPG It's called Fortune Summoners. And I don't want to get too much into it because that's what I'm going to be quickly reviewing later on in the segment. But that's the biggest game I've been playing right now. And then earlier today, I found someone on Reddit who had posted their game for free and said, hey, you know, check it out, play it, and if you like it, if you want to, you can donate. And I started kind of playing that earlier. The game's called Lucid. And it's kind of like Bejeweled, where it's that type of game where you have to, like, put similar patterns or similar blocks together, and then they destroy, and then you get points from that. The difference is that you have to draw a line from one point to another in order to get those squares to blow up. So you have to be able to draw that line without going back or missing one. So if there's four squares next to each other and they're the same color, you want to blow them up, you have to take the line from the first square all the way to the end of the fourth square so that the things will blow up. And if you can't, then it's just not going to work. You have to, like, find another pattern or another thing that you want to destroy. So I know that sounds kind of weird. It's just one of those games you kind of have to sit down and play, and then you'll see what I mean. But it's actually really fun. I've been enjoying it. I've only got to play it for about an hour earlier today, but I can't wait to play it some more. And then definitely going to donate some money to this guy because it's a good game, and it's a fun little concept. There's a fun little twist on those type of games. So that's what I've been playing.
Lucid, so you just expect people to search for Lucid, I guess, to find it?
Yeah, just search Lucid Game. If anything, depending on where we put this up, we can find a link, or I'll put up a link.
We got to figure out where we're going to post this at. I don't know, maybe we might start a WordPress site for this, or maybe we can get the kind folks at wouldyoukindly.com. Hey, there's a plug. plug.
Can edit in that part from the field.
Would you kindly like people to come to their site, support this stupid podcast. But no. Yeah, we're all getting shit canned. But yeah, anything else? Did you find anything in the stores or online that you thought was interesting, maybe?
At the moment, these last couple of days, I haven't been doing any of my usual, like, thrifting or any shopping. So I haven't run into anything cool. The last thing that I did find was this giant Pikachu plush that's almost as big as I am. And that cost me a total and a whopping $15. And if you know me, I'm on the verge of moving to the other side of the country. I have barely any room in my place at all. And here I am with a Pikachu plush that's almost as tall as I am. And, I mean, for $15, I could not say no to this thing. But it is the greatest thing. It is one of the greatest things I've ever bought. And, like, I have it during the day. I have it sitting on my bed. And at night when I go to sleep, I, like, throw it out to the side. And I know I'm just going to get way too much shit from my girlfriend from that one, because she's just, when I told her that I was thinking of buying it, she's like, no, you don't need a giant Pikachu, and here I am. Another great thing, though, that is up online, and you're going to have to get it on eBay, or you're going to have to go to a specialty store to pick this out, mm-hmm. But if you look up the Pokemon Center in Japan, they have this great, great stuff for Valentine's Day. And the most interesting one that I found is these two coffee cups, right? Yeah. And one of them, one side is a boy Pikachu, and on the other side, it's a girl Pikachu.
How can you tell which one's the boy and the girl?
Well, I'm glad you asked. The girl Pikachu, her tail has a little heart thingy at the end. So it kind of, like, does this little heart thing at the very tip of the tail. And the guy Pikachu doesn't. That's probably her vagina, you're right.
Pikachu, like, in the cup. Tails. It's in the Pokédex, dumbass.
If you pick up the cup, you're actually holding her by the tail, which takes that thing just a little bit more. But yeah, it is a really cute thing. They're only doing it for Valentine's Day. I've seen them on eBay for like $100. I wish I had the money to drop on those things, because it's a set of both for $100, but I have to pass. Maybe I'll find them again someday in the future, but it is definitely something really cool. If you're a Pokemon fan, and, you know, you want something kind of nice or a little different gift idea for your Valentine, that's definitely something to check out if you can drop the $100 for it.
That's cool. That's cool. I mean, I'm not going to question your manhood whatsoever. And audience, don't question his manhood, because there's nothing wrong with a little Pikachu porn. Anyway, enough of that. Just offended half our audience, so now Pokemon's cool. I actually played a few of the games. I mean, I think the last one, I can't remember if I got, I think I got Pokemon Black, I believe. I don't remember if I got White or Black, but I grew up playing Pokemon too. I mean, like, I loved Red and Blue on Game Boy, so, and I had Yellow. And I pretty much got them all until, like, Gold and Silver, and then I didn't buy Crystal, but yeah. So, I do like Pokemon to some extent. I used to watch the cartoon like crazy, but anyway, I guess,
got me hooked when I was a kid, so.
What's that?
I said the cartoon got me hooked on the series when I was a kid. That was my first
watching
experience with Pokemon. So I love that series. Like,
I used to get like, be like, oh, Misty. Oh, I have a thing for redheads. Sadly, that was kind of true as a kid. I'm not afraid to admit it. I'm a man.
Who is it? Misty in those shorts. Come on.
Yeah.
I always had a thing for the Nurse Joys of the world.
Yeah. Would you get confused if you had a three-way with one of them and be like, wait, which one am I banging?
Yeah, I would never be able to tell them apart. I'd have to leave, like, I'm sure Brock would be able to tell them apart, but not me.
Well, just look at the tails, and if one's a heart shape.
Oh, man. All right, Adam, what have you been playing?
Okay, well, I've been playing a couple things. One I'm not going to get into just yet. I haven't been playing a ton at the moment because I've just been kind of lazy when it comes to playing anything. But I've been playing on my 3DS a downloadable game called Mutant Muds. If you guys haven't heard of it, it's pretty cool. Check it out. It's like 8 something, I believe, like almost $9. It's pretty good. It's a very hard kind of old schoolish platformer, but the cool thing about it is even though it's 2D, it's got like 3D. It takes real good advantage of the 3D. And even though I'm not a huge 3D fan, I think it's really cool how they did it because, like, you've got 3 different planes you can jump back and forth between. You collect all these little icons or coins or whatever, and you got to shoot these little muds with your little, like, pistol or bazooka little thing. And you jump between these platforms, and you can see yourself. It's kind of hard to explain. Just go look at a video online or something, Mutant Muds. It's a pretty cool little action platformer. Also, been playing, and I have to thank my fiance for this. We exchanged our Valentine's gifts a little early, and we were able to get this GameStop where she lives to order this from Tennessee, and it's called Radiant Historia, which has already been announced for reprint. And I'm like 6 hours in, and I love the concept and I love how it works. Pretty much, it's a JRPG, and what you do in it is that you kind of go back and forth between 2 time periods. And what you do at each time period affects the other one. So sometimes if you're stuck in something, let's say there's like this rock wall you can't get through, but there was a guy that didn't, like, they were supposed to, like, give you explosives, but he kind of died or something. So you, like, go back in time to the other time period, and you go save said guy, then you come back, and the guy comes and he does his thing. So it's a really cool concept so far. I really like it. I definitely want to get back and keep playing into it. I'm going to try and make myself finish a JRPG. I've not finished a JRPG since 2009 when I played Persona 4. And damn, that's a good game. love that game to death. But as far as stuff I picked up, I've talked about McKids. I picked that up $5 at a flea market. I grew up playing this game. I don't know why. I just kind of wanted to get some of the games I rented and I played back in the day. And I may do a video on it. Why not? McKids, yeah, get you a greasy fat cheeseburger for your kid. Nearby Kmart is going out of business, so they're having a clearance, and I'm probably going to go back and get some more stuff, but I got a couple Wii games for some pretty good prices. They were doing some discounts. Picked up Monster Hunter Tri for Wii. Kind of can't wait to get in this game. I got a friend that has it, so if anybody has it, contact me. I might play or something. I still gotta get a Wii speak. Apparently, none of the other headsets or mics work with the game. But yeah, I picked that Monster Hunter Tri. Picked that up for like $12, brand new. And also got Super Paper Mario for like $15. I rented that a while back. That was kind of cool game as well. And I have not yet played those two, but yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to trying those out sometime.
Those are actually great prices for those games. Those
yeah, like I said, they're doing
like by my place.
Yeah, they're going out of the business. I mean, they still have like a copy of Persona 3 FES for the PlayStation 2. I was like, wow, they had that? I didn't even know they had that. They have a few copies of Ghost Trick. I mean, they have some pretty, like, kind of more obscure titles. I mean, they still have, like, 360 PS3 stuff, but I think the Wii and the DS stuff is kind of more obscure, kind of more of the niche kind of titles, which I'm kind of like, oh, that's so cool. I did not expect to find Monster Hunter there, but I was looking for it, and they have one copy of Super Paper Mario, so I had to kind of grab that. But, I mean, like, everything in that whole store, I mean, even, like, you know, cans of Coke or Cola is, like, this kind of like they're trying to clear it out, which is kind of sad because that's how I got all my consoles. Like I went in my TV, I went to Kmart, used the layaway system because I had a job that didn't make too much, but if I wanted something, I could just go to the Kmart, which was nearby where I used to work, and I would just like put something on layaway and just pay it off, and then I finally get it. And so that's how I got the majority of my modern consoles.
Well, that's kind of sad to see them go then, but.
Yeah, but there's another Kmart, like, in the major city of Lexington, and where my fiancé lives, they still have a Kmart, but, you know, so it's not like, you know, I'll be without something. You know, there's plenty of places, plus online, I can always get stuff online, so. But I still like
it. Yeah, that's true. You can always do online, but for me, there are times when I don't want to wait for shipping, so I have to go
ahead and continue. I'm the same way. Oh my gosh, you must be my brother.
Brother from another mother.
I don't know, maybe we might have the same parents, I don't know.
Well, I guess we'll have to figure it out.
I'm just the albino, Latino, I don't know.
Yeah,
I hope I'm not insulting you, but...
No, not at all, not at all. But yeah, I mean, you're right, I love... it's great to be able to order stuff online, and be able to get it cheaper, but there's just times I just don't want to wait, like, I want the game now. And even, for example, when I bought Pokemon White...
Late at night. Because that's going to be, like, an extra day added to it, too.
Exactly, yeah. So, like, when I bought Pokemon White, I bought it because the mom-and-pop store that's nearby my place had received it, like, the weekend before, and they were just already starting to sell it.
See, I don't have that.
So yet. I had a pre-order on Amazon, and I just canceled it, and I ran to the store, and I was like, I need that game right now.
Awesome. Yeah, all the local sellers around here are, like, some of the other small game shops around here, they're kind of like, no, we don't want to break street date. Why? But anyways. I'll talk about one cool thing I found. I just found it on, actually, eBay today. I might send you a link if you're interested. I don't know if you are or not, but there's this, I'm a big Mega Man fan, especially of the X series. And on eBay, I did not know they had this item. And apparently they have a bunch of them. I'm almost tempted to get one, just because it's got Mega Man. It's a Mega Man X4 race car. It's a Porsche Boxster? I've never heard of a Boxster, but apparently, yeah, they've made a Mega Man X4 toy car. It just has Mega Man X4 on the side of it. I did not know this thing even existed. This is like a crazy, crazy item.
Yeah, I saw that earlier when you tweeted it. And I just saw the new link that you sent right now, and I actually finally see a picture of the actual, like, car, because earlier they didn't even have that, but it looks really cool, and I had no idea that they did stuff like this either.
I didn't either.
I guess that's one of the things about, like, collecting, or just, like, in general being a fan of the series. There's stuff that'll just completely fly by you, even, like, as much of a hardcore fan as anyone can be, there's just stuff you'll just completely forget. Exactly. Like, did you know, like, I had forgotten that when the Pokemon series first came out in the U.S., they did almost, like, are you familiar with the little Tamagotchi things?
Yeah, I used to have, like, the Pokemon Pikachu thing.
Yeah, I forgot that there was one for Pikachu.
I killed mine.
Until I saw it the other day. It's the coolest fucking thing ever. So, I mean, it's just stuff like this that you kind of miss out on, and, like, I saw it on I saw your tweet about it earlier, and now that I'm actually looking at that picture,
yeah.
I think I'm going to bid on it.
Let's see, how many of them were there? Let's see. There are, how many is he selling? I thought it had a quantity on it. But, oh, you can actually either bid or buy it now. But, man, the shipping's a little pricey. It's $5.75. What the hell, guy? What the hell?
Yeah, but still, you're still looking at about $15 max for that toy, which I'm sure you could, like, when it came out, it was maybe about, like, $9 or so. So for about $15, I'd say that's not a bad deal. And I know it sounds like a lot, but apparently there were, like, only 20,000 of these made. So it's not too bad, I guess, because when you figure out that there are a lot that were given to kids and taken out of the box and just got completely destroyed or just, you know, completely broken, I'm sure it might add a little bit.
You know what? I may actually get that. That's the only one there. Damn. I'm going to have to fight you for it. We're going to have to...
Well, no, I mean, if it comes down to the both of us, I think you're a bigger Mega Man fan than I am, so I wouldn't bid on it.
No, we're going to fight
to
fucking death. You don't understand. I'm getting a knife and stabbing you for this thing.
A good old knife fight? I'm down.
All right.
You need a monkey to referee.
You need a monkey.
You need a monkey to referee. And the only reason I thought of monkey is because the first thing that came to my mind when I said knife fight was the episode of The Simpsons where Mo has a monkey and they're in international waters and the monkeys are having this, like, knife fight.
I thought you were going to mention a Family Guy reference. Hold the monkey, Family Guy!
Oh, the evil monkey in his closet?
Yeah.
That's funny, too. Like, I think that's... I know it's, like, a worn-out skit, but it's one of my favorite skits. I remember the scene later on in the series where Chris says, you know, the sad part is he wasn't always evil. And you see this little monkey he's walking home with a suit and a little, like, briefcase, and he opens the door, and there's his wife sleeping with another monkey, and he kind of just, like, drops the suitcase, and he does that point at them, and he's like, ah. Okay, that was a tangent.
That's cool. I mean, hey, it's all about having fun here on the Shoulder Buttons podcast. We are going to engrave that to your brains. Subscribe now! Dun-dun. Anyway.
Or when we get a subscribe now button, that would also be a good time.
Yeah, or when we get actual listeners, which I hope you guys are listening. Please listen. Please. Anyways, yeah, that's enough for me. I guess let's go on to our quick reviews. So tell me about Fortune Summoners. Is it like Publisher's Clearinghouse, the RPG?
No.
Ed McMahon put it there and be a wizard.
No, it's about, the basic story is, you play as this girl, and in this world, magic is kind of this everyday thing. You have like these stone, like these like gems or whatever, and, oh man, I'm not doing any justice to it at all, because I only have like 2 hours of gameplay on this, but so far...
Just talk about like what you enjoyed about so far, what you think about it so far.
Well, as far as, like, the actual, like, battling elements, it's pretty fun. Like, I'm playing it, you can only get it on Steam, so you're either playing on your keyboard or you're playing on, like, one of the controllers that you can hook up to it. I don't have one of those, so I'm just, like, on my keyboard. And the gameplay is pretty good. It's just a pretty good RPG. It's an action RPG. And so far, the basis of the story is, you know, you're playing as this girl who just moved into town with her family, and you're starting to go to school at this magic school, and as far as, like, you know, like, you have to have certain gems to be able to use magic, but she doesn't have one, so at the very beginning, you're trying to find one of these gems. Like, they're supposed to be really expensive, and someone tells her that there's one of these things hidden in a cave. So you go into the cave and you get to the very end of the cave and you think, all right, you know, just like any RPG, that thing's going to be there, and it's not there. So you go, you have to go all the way back home. It's just, it's a really fun game. The reason that I started playing it is because of the way that it was released. And I know that sounds weird, but the game was published in the States by a company called Carpe Fulgur. And what they do is they take, like, indie games from Japan, they release them out in the States. And it's a lot like what another company has been doing for a couple of years now called Rockin' Android. And they take bullet hell games, bullet hell shooters, and release them out in the States as well. So most of these are games that are done by, like, one person or, like, a very small group of people.
Yeah, I know about Rock and Andrew. There was one game they put out on PS3. I can't think of it. It was, like, an action little hack-and-slash game. I don't know if you know what I'm talking about. But I can't
It is the last game that they released. It's called Crescent Pale Mist.
Yes, Crescent Pale Mist.
Yeah, I think it's about, like, $6 on the PlayStation Network.
Yeah, it was tough, but I liked it, though.
And what they do, like, I'm always fascinated with these companies because they take these really niche titles, release them out in the States where they could maybe have an audience for them or maybe they couldn't have an audience for them. It's kind of like a gamble with each one. But for the most part, the games that are released, they've already have a big backing in Japan. So
no,
first
Chris, we don't want to go too far into this just yet. We want to save just a little bit for our future segment.
Which we'll be doing now. You're right. So, but when it comes down to the game that I'm playing right now, Fortune Summoners, I'm really enjoying it so far. It, like I said, I'm not too far into the game, but it's definitely a fun little RPG, and it's not something that's going to take me forever and a day to finish. But if you're willing to drop down $20 on the game, you should definitely check it out. If not, you can go to the website Carpe Fulgur, CarpeFulgur. Download the demo and give it a try, and if you're into these type of games, you can drop $20 on Steam for it and play it, because it's a really nice game. But if you go to the official website, you can download a demo of the game and give it a try for yourself and just see what you think.
Yeah, I saw a little bit of gameplay. I was watching it on YouTube, and it kind of made me think a little bit of MapleStory, but is it, I seem like multiple people, is it a multiplayer game that you know of so far, or is it...
It's not a multiplayer game, but you have... Like, you can, you know, like with any RPG, you'll get people that follow you around. And as the story progresses, you get more and more people that'll follow you around. You can switch between the characters while you're fighting. Or like, not while you're fighting, but you can switch between the characters and control a different character each time. Or else, like, the UI will take control of the characters that are following you.
Might have to check out that demo, though, sometime.
Yeah, definitely, at least, like I said, give the demo a try. If you're a fan of RPGs, or even if you're just a fan of supporting indie games, give the demo a try and see what you have to think for yourself. And hopefully, what I've been planning to do is, like, do an actual full-blown review of the game once I actually finish it, but that might not be for another week or two.
Hey, that's cool. I look forward to reading it, for sure. Okay, so talk about my Milo Mini review. Like you said, I've only played this for just a little bit, but... Okay, I'm going to review a Flash game. Now, people, calm down. Don't raise your forks and arms at pitchforks at me. This is actually kind of freaking cool. And I played Super Mario Crossover 2. Yes, it's out. And have you heard anything about Super Mario Crossover, any of those games?
I have not. This is my first time hearing about them. I didn't even get a chance to Google it before we started the podcast.
That's fine. Let me go ahead and see if I can pull up the website real fast here. That I had it on ad, actually. Okay. If you go to explodingrabbit.com, yes, I'm not even making that up, just go to their website and you can find it on there. They did what's called Super Mario Crossover 2. And the first one, this is similar to games like Bobo's Big Adventure that was released recently on Flash. It's like these kind of, like, what-if NES game titles. And the first one, like, you had, like, a handful of characters. It's pretty much... random NES characters playing through Super Mario Brothers, like Mega Man, the dude from Contra, Link, Samus, and so on. And this one adds, like, a bunch of new characters to it, like Bass and Luigi. There's a little, what's that little robot car with the little guy in it? I can't think. Blaster Master, maybe? I'm thinking that's it.
Oh, if you might be talking about Blaster Master, I'll have to take a look at the actual game. But I think that's what you're talking
about. Sorry, guys, but yeah, I mean, and it's got that, Simon Belmont, Ryu from Ninja Gaiden, and, like, a couple others. And the cool thing about Bass, I just want to go ahead and talk about him, Bass from Mega Man, is that he has an alternate outfit where you play as Dr. Wily, so it's Dr. Wily with a pistol, playing as Bass. It's kind of fun. Funny, actually. And Mario has an alternate skin where he's a devil. So if you see devil, I guess, as one of the first characters, you wonder what Mario is. It's just an alternate skin for Mario for some reason. But, yeah, it's really quite fun and surprisingly challenging. Mario and Luigi, of course, can jump on enemies and kill them, where Mega Man and everybody else has to use their signature attacks, so they can't jump on enemies and kill them. Like I said, of course, the Contra guy does his Contra weapon, and, of course, it's one-hit kills unless you get, like, a power-up, like mushrooms or whatever. And there's even a special button where some characters can do special things on top of it, like Link can throw his boomerang if he hits the button. And, of course, he's got his stat moves and stuff. And like I said, they got all kinds of alternate costumes for the characters. Another cool thing about it is that you can change the stage and enemy layouts. You can give it, like, a Mario 3 look. You can give it, like, a Game Boy look. You can give it... like, it's crazy how they customize it, and it plays exactly the same. It just changes the look of everything. And it's like, this guy has put, like, so much work into it. I just hope a lawyer doesn't make him take it down. Like, it's just so freaking cool what he did. It blows the first one away, but, I mean, definitely check it out. ExplodingRabbit.com is where you can find it, and, of course, it's completely free. I do recommend that if you can download Joy2Key, the free program that allows you to map your, like, your... keyboard keys to gamepad, definitely do that. Because I don't know if I would recommend playing the platformers with a keyboard and mouse.
But yeah, it actually sounds really interesting and a lot of fun. Actually, you brought up Bobo's Big Adventure, and yeah. there's an arcade cabinet for it. That I think it's just owned, like, just the creators have it, but there is a cabinet for it out there, and I've actually gotten a chance to play it. Last year at a gaming thing that happens in LA called the SC3, which is the Southern California Classic Collectors.
Yeah.
And it's this big thing that happens maybe once or twice a year, and it always ends up being just a bunch of arcade cabinets on free to play and some of the coolest people that you'll ever meet. But the last time that I went, they had an actual cabinet for that game, and it was, when I got a chance to play, it was a lot of fun.
Wow, that's crazy that they actually made an arcade cabinet for a Flash game. That's ridiculous. But, it's still cool, though. I still have yet to play it. I know a good friend of mine on YouTube has reviewed it, and a bunch of people seem to like it, and I'll have to try that one out, too. But Super Mario Crossover 2, definitely excellent. It's free. You have no excuse not to play it. Just play it. Anyway... Awkward silence. Next subject.
Yeah.
Awkward silence, yeah. No. Let's go on to our main segment, which we already talked a little bit. We're starting out about niche gaming companies. And what do we think that big gaming companies can learn from? Like you were talking about Rockin' Android, and what was the other one? I've never heard of them.
The other one is Carpet Fulber, and I had never heard of them either until I heard about Fortune Summoners, and I got a little bit into that. But basically, again, their whole thing is they take indie games that were released in Japan and either translate them into English and then release them out in the States. Rocket Android has been around since 2009, and I think this other company has been around for maybe about 2 or 3 years, too. I don't really know off the top of my head. But they do the exact same thing. What I like about these companies, again, is just that they take these games and release them out here so that they get a wider audience. And the big thing about it is it's niche games that have a particular following. Cause I don't hear a lot of people that are into like Bullet Hill games, but from the success that Rockin' Android has as far as the release of their games that they've done in the past, there are fans out there for these type of things. I actually had a really great chance because I've had a couple of opportunities to sit down and talk to Enrique Galvez, and he's the owner and founder of Rockin' Android. And one of the things he told me in one of the very first few times that I've met him, after the acceleration of Suguri had come out, we talked a little bit about it, and he said, you know, the funniest thing is you would think that these games would be doing amazing in the download market, like Gamer's Gate, which is at the time the only digital release that they had at Gamer's Gate, and they had a physical copy of the game, and more people were interested in buying the physical copies of Acceleration of Suguri, the Gundamonium collection, than there were in interesting in buying the downloadable version of the game, which is I always found to be one of those like little interesting tidbits. And when I was going through the original frequently asked questions site for Carpe Fuller, when they talked about fortune summoners, one of the things that they did mention was that, yes, there was no physical copy of the game, and they knew that the fan community and the community for these games preferred to have a digital, they preferred to have a physical copy of the game. And it's interesting because you hear a lot about how the industry is moving to a download-only type of section, to a digital distribution type of section. And as much as I think that's great and it makes it a lot easier for the consumers, as it does for the actual publishers of the game, I am always a huge fan of owning the physical copy, and I will always be a huge fan of owning the physical copy, to the point where I actually own 3 different versions of the Gundamonium collection. I have the physical copy of the game, I have it on my PlayStation Network, and I have it on Steam, which it was just recently, they've just recently released it a couple of months ago, so I'm really excited for Rockin' Android. I hope that they're able to keep doing what they're doing, much like Carpe Fuller. I hope that they can make enough money from these things, show that there is a fan base, and keep releasing games like these out in the States. And as far as what these companies can teach the major publishers, is that we don't always have to see the same well-known entities all the time. Like, we don't always need a new Mario game. We don't always need a new Pokemon game. You can introduce something new to us, and if those games are good, if they're playable, and if they're fun, we'll want more, and we'll buy it. One of the things that Carpe Fuller did, which I was really impressed with, right before the game was released, it was delayed about twice, I believe. And the first time they delayed it, they talked about that it was delayed because they were working out some glitches. And one of the things they said was that they had done, and I didn't know this before because, again, I just recently found out about this company, they had done a Facebook post, a poll, where they asked people, what would you want to pay for the game? Because the game was, when it was released, was originally going to cost $24.99. And based on the fan feedback that they got, they saw that people didn't want to pay $25 for a digital game like Fortune Summoners, but that they would be way more willing to buy it if it cost $19.99 or $15.99. So based on the fan reaction, the first week that it was released, the game was on sale for $15. After the first week, it went up to only $19, and it's not going to go any higher than $19. And because they listened to their fans, and because their fans told them, hey, I like this idea, I like what you're going to release, but $25 is just a little bit too much for this type of game. And they went ahead, they listened to the feedback, and they took it into consideration. And I think more major companies need to take that feedback from their fans into consideration. And another, a huge, huge example is what we just saw a couple of days ago with the adventure game that's going to be released by Tim Schafer? Am I pronouncing that right?
Yeah, he did this Kickstarter and, was able to get a bunch of money.
The last time I checked, it was already at over $1 million. Like, it hit $1 million. It hit in one day. Like, that's how popular the reaction was.
Yeah, as far as the whole Tim Schafer thing goes, I think it's a great idea, and I think other game companies are going to look into that, and they're going to be like, you know what? They've seen how much money he raised for this project so he can do it and make this game. And they're going to be like, you know what, maybe we should focus more on this stuff. And they're going to have to expect, the industry is going to have to expect, you can't make big blockbuster titles all the time. You can't be the next Call of Duty, you can't be the next Skyrim. You just got to get over that fact. I would much rather have a few good smaller titles out there that were really well, really good quality, something that's really well made and interesting, over a big budget first person shooter, a big budget RPG any day. We were talking about smaller companies. Talk about somebody a little bit bigger like Atlus, which recently, with the Radiant Historia reprint, and luckily I was able to find my copy. In games like this, do you really think that a big publisher like EA or Capcom or anybody would be like, JRPG on the DS? Who would want to do that? Unless it's like a Dragon Quest or Final Fantasy with a big name on it, but not like a small game like this. And this game came out last year. Early last year, and it got really expensive really quick. And Atlas just started asking their fans on Facebook, like, and their fans have been asking, like, how many of you guys would seriously buy this if we reprinted it? And people just flooded their Facebook and just like, yes, we would buy this. And so they finally announced that they are reprinting it and it's going to be available in March. And other companies should learn, like the whole Mega Man debacle, which I know you know about the whole thing, and I was all upset about them canning Mega Man Legends 3. And what if Capcom had actually decided to listen to the screaming fan base? If this was Atlas, Atlas would have been like, wow, we made a mistake. Maybe we should really get back on the ball with this. Whereas Capcom, you know, they're looking more at stats and like how many, like, millions of copies they sell. Atlas is more focused on bringing quality titles to a smaller market. Maybe if they, you know, of course, Atlas doesn't put out, like, a ton of commercials for their games like, you know, Capcom or any of these others. But if they can be happy with selling something that's going to be kind of niche, you know, and make a quick buck, why not?
Well, the thing with Atlas and the thing with companies like Rockin' Android is that even though they do approach a smaller segment of the audience, they have enough people obviously buying the titles to turn a profit and still continue to be a legitimate business, or still continue to be a business that continues to grow. And that's because they're able to take a look at what their fans like and go from there. They're able to give the fans what they want. Now, I'm not saying that the big companies always have to give me the game that I want, but if they were to listen to their fans more often and they were actually cared enough to see what games we really want, they'd be making more money and you would be seeing a lot more people going out to buy the games.
I don't think that's exactly like a lot of people are like, oh, Capcom wants to troll. I don't really think that it's a good business decision. I don't think it's what they're trying to do. I think they're trying to look at a quote-unquote big picture, and if something isn't a big moneymaker like Resident Evil is, and I don't understand the whole Legends 3 thing because it's Mega Man, that's their big IP name, but, I mean, you know, even if you sold a game and you wasn't going to expect to make as much, maybe sell it for, you know, maybe a little bit less, don't put as much marketing behind it, maybe focus more on internet marketing. I mean, they got their Capcom Unity and stuff. I mean, they could still do that. And, I mean, like, word of mouth is still very powerful, especially in the social media age. Word of mouth is important. I mean, less people watch TV now, more people are on Twitter and Facebook. And I could see, like, these people are still campaigning for Mega Man Legends 3. And they're still, like, you know, fighting hard. And I will tell you one success story of a fan campaign. And, of course, this is a niche title being put out by Nintendo, and, of course, it's Xenoblade. We're finally getting to North America. And
while
some people, I truly believe this, although some people may be like, well, they had nothing to really do with it, I think that either, because, you know, it's going to be kind of a GameStop Nintendo exclusive kind of deal, that either Nintendo or GameStop listened to them, and somehow either Nintendo or GameStop or whoever kind of worked out this agreement, like, okay, we understand this is not going to be a Mario, this is not going to be a Zelda, but there is enough people here to where we can make some profit, and it's not going to be hard for us to do because Europe's already translating everything. All we have to do is just do some minor localization to the text probably or whatever to get it out here. And that is such a brilliant move that they did, because it proves that they're wanting to do it, even though they're not as willing to make a big TV advertisement campaign on it. I mean, they got somebody like GameStop, which, you know, some people don't like, but they got enough power to push that game. That company's got enough power to push it, as far as, like, you know, selling it and everything else. And that is a great thing that they have done. And yeah, it's not in every store, and it's not available everywhere, but the fact that it is coming and people are going to get an opportunity and a chance to play it says something. And if more companies can do stuff like that, I think more gamers would love these gaming companies more. Like I said, I know they can't bring everything we personally like, but if there's a demand and an audience out there to turn a profit, why not do it?
Yeah, and you're definitely right about that. I mean, they're not going to bring everything that we like, but the fans, especially in this case, I believe that they had everything to do with the release of that game in the States. Because even before when the game was first announced that it was going to Europe, there was excitement. It was like, oh, does that mean it's going to come to the States? And it was a flat out, no, we're not considering releasing this for North America from Nintendo. And that's when you saw like the campaigns kind of kick off, and it took a while, but Nintendo finally agreed to do it. And I think that this definitely worked as a great experiment for Nintendo. And as long as the people that were so adamant and so, opinion, like so willing to tell Nintendo, I'll buy it if you release it, as long as they actually stick to their word and they actually go out and buy it, I think that especially companies like Nintendo and all the other bigger companies will definitely start to put some kind of attention toward what the fans want and what the fans ask. And it will lead to a lot more happier gamers than there are now.
Of course, companies like Atlus and Axis Games, like, of course, you know how much I love fighters. They're the ones who got the Guilty Gear license and, of course, released Blaze Blue series out here. And they have been promoting that, and, of course, through social media and stuff, and that's one of my favorite fighting games of the modern era. And they listen to people, they come and feedback, and I'll tell you a story that I've had with Axis that just pleased me. It was just so easy to get a hold of them. Like, I bought, like, the special edition for PS3 Blaze Blue when it first came out, and it came with a bonus Blu-ray. Blu-ray didn't work. I messaged somebody through the forums, like, someone that actually worked with them. They gave me a contact. I told them the situation, and they asked me if I'd tried this. I told them, you know, no, I mean, it didn't work. I mean, everything I did. So they're like, okay, just send us the disc in, and we'll ship it back. So I did that, and then it didn't take very long, actually. I think it was maybe a week, not even that. And then I got the disc back, and they also gave me this little binder with all the characters in like a little chibi format. And it was something like, you didn't have to give me something nice. You didn't have to give me something extra, but you did. And I know some companies do, but to me, I think that's kind of like saying, hey, we're sorry you had this problem. Here's a gift on us, and we're here to take care of this. And, you know, I just really think that was really great of them to do that. And like I said, these smaller companies like this, they understand that, even though they're niche, they understand what drives their business is the people that buy the games. If they know what they want, if they don't just look at what Billy Ray Cyrus is going to go buy at GameStop for his 8-year-old kid, you know, they know that, okay, there is a market here for this, and if we can go get it, we can make a little side profit. I mean, yeah, you can still make the big budget games, but make some smaller games too, and get some of that extra pocket money. And you make, everybody wins. But, of course, it's not going to work unless you actually promote it online. Another good example of something that kind of failed, even though it's big publishers, EA, it was one of the Shadows of the Damned. And I thought that game, like, deserved better praise and stuff, and because it wasn't marketed at all, I mean, there's hardly any online stuff for it, and it just fell flat out. But what do you think?
As far as the fans being a vocal part of it, I think that you're completely right. And companies should definitely take more an effort to listen to what their fans want and see what their fans are requesting. But at the same time, the fans have to remember that they have to be able to essentially put their, you know, like, put their money where their mouth is. Like, if they say, if you release this, I'll buy it, you have to be able to go out and buy it. Otherwise, it's going to get to a point where companies will release anything we want, and then no one will buy it, and then it'll just go back to them just relying on the big blockbuster titles, just releasing more of that, and that's it. And then we'll go back to complaining, and it'll just be some giant crappy circle. And the reason I say that specifically is because I take a look at, like, the anime industry in the United States and how that worked for the longest time. And companies, especially when they started to struggle, some companies kind of paid attention to what some of the fans would want as far as a release would go. And I don't remember the name, but I always remember one specific title where it was a huge request from fans. It was a huge community that said, release this and we'll buy it. One company went out, licensed it, released it. No one bought it. I mean, they didn't even make enough money to even finish the series in North America. So it kind of just died there, you know. And I would hate to see that happen with the gaming industry where give us this, and then no one buys it. So that's my biggest fear with the title from Nintendo is that everyone wants it, but when the game finally comes out, no one's going to want to buy it. Adam.
Talking with the mic on mute again. Genius. Anyway, like I said, yeah, you gotta put your money where your mouth is. You gotta go out there and pre-order. That's how these stores know. I mean, these feedback, like when you go to GameStop or Best Buy or anywhere, I think the feedback, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that their feedback actually goes back to these places so they know how many to ship. And they really count on that nowadays, I think. A lot of companies, like, they kind of see the initial first purchase, and they're going to be like, okay, well, these people are going to, that might increase the sales even more for the ones that are after the first run or after the first batch have been sold, you know, or after the pre-order people get it. And like I said, if you do not put your money where your mouth is and you don't get the game you want, you only have yourself to blame for it.
Definitely. And then I'd really like to see, you know, if anyone out there is listening to the podcast and you have your own opinions on this, or if you want to be able to weigh in, I definitely think that they should just email either of us. I mean, you could reach me just that.
Post it on our Twitters and Game Machine Facebook. We'll try to get some links. Or maybe, or wherever we get this posted, we'll find a way for you guys to chime in on this stuff. Definitely want to hear something. Heck, I mean, we may even get, like, audio questions. We might even do that in the future and just throw those in. But anyways, what else? Is there anything else you want to say on the subject or anything else?
No, I think that pretty much covers, like, what I think on the subject and what I'd like to see come out of it. Now it's just I'd like to hear what other people think about it. I definitely like to hear what the listeners have to think, or just other people who, you know, like, who are, I guess, kind of, like, writers or also somehow doing things related to video games. I want to know what you guys think about it.
Yeah, and pre-order Radiant Historia and Xenoblade. I want the frickin' last story. I know Radiant Historia didn't have anything to do with it, but I'm enjoying the damn game so far.
Yeah, I guess this brings us up to our next segment, which is something we'd like to call the community segment. We'll think of a cool name for it later. Basically, what this is going to run down, it's going to be me and Adam either focusing on a particular website or a particular person that we find interesting within the video game community and we think that you should be paying attention to. The reason I really wanted to do this, and I was really glad when Adam brought it up, is because I think that as gamers, there's a lot of people within the industry that we don't know about, whether they be writers for video games or just people that work for video games or people that work that do some kind of video game related work that we should be paying attention to. We should be able to, much like you can go, like, with movie fans, you know who, like, certain script writers are or certain directors are. I think that we need to have that in the gaming community as well. So this
not
is
only
this
that, is but the community itself, and I definitely want to stress this, it's not just, like you said, although definitely those people need to get exposed too. Also, people in the community that make a difference. I mean, people on YouTube, people who, people who make fan games. Or, like I said, I love the crap out of fan games. I think sometimes they do better than the companies themselves, like the Super Mario crossover, stuff like that. I mean, not just that, but the gaming community in general, because there's just so much wealth, talent, and people that in the industry and people who are just fans in general of games, and they produce their own stuff. They have their own blog, and they're willing to, they have interesting spin on stuff. And like I said, this segment is for those people that we think deserve some focus, because there's a lot of times out there, and there's a lot of podcasts I listen to and other videos I watch out there, and sometimes they just only mention people that might be more well known, and it's like, well, you know, I have no problem with that. Just sometimes I think there's some littler people out there that deserve a spotlight, you know, a little more spotlight, you know. So, but yeah, all pick one, and we just kind of go from there. We pick our one for each week or 2 weeks or however we're going to fix this. Like I said, this is the pilot airplane.
Yeah, I guess going with that, since we have a theme of me starting in this episode, I'll go with the first one as well. Oh yeah, that
sorry, man. I'm bad about that. I don't mean to. Like, I just like I don't know.
No, it happens. Anytime you feel you have something to add, just feel right in and drop by.
Fuck.
Just like that. For me, this particular time, for the first one, I chose to go with a guy named Kyle Prawl, and I'm sorry if I'm pronouncing his name wrong. It's a spelled Phrahl. Let me just make sure.
Oh, Steve.
I'm pretty sure that's fucked up. Yeah, sorry, it's Prahl, Kyle Prawl. And he's the associate editor for a video game site called Vivid Gamers. And the reason I'm talking about him is because the first way that I found out about this website and this associate editor in general is because back on January 23rd, he did a interview with Jason Rubin, which is one of the co-founders of Naughty Dog, and I found it to be one of the best interviews that I've read in a while, because he goes into topics that are more than just, oh, well, tell us about the big game that you worked on, or, you know, tell us about what you're doing now in life. One of the topics that they discussed were what I had just mentioned earlier, which is like the unsung heroes of gaming. And there's an interesting part where Jason Rubin compares Peter Jackson and Will Wright, and he says, you know, it's kind of sad that you have someone who's as famous as Will Wright, but he's not a household name like Peter Jackson. As much of an impact as he's had in the video game world, he's just not that well known outside of the gaming world. Now, Will Wright, I think it's interesting that he chose Will Wright just because he would be one of the people that even non-huge gamers would know, but you get that thing where he's 100% true. There's people out there in the industry and the fan side of it that more people should be aware of, but we're not. And later on in the interview, he starts talking about the current state of gaming and how social networking is going to play an important role in the future of the gaming industry. He talks about piracy and the current state of DRM. And it's a really great article to read. It's a great interview to read. And I just don't see that in gaming interviews as much as it should be seen. Like, this is one of, like, it's rare, it's one of those rare pieces where you can go, this is video game journalism. This is real journalism dealing with video games. And I think it was a great article to read, and I look forward to seeing more stuff like this from him and from Vivid Gamers in the future. So it's actually, ever since then, it's one of the sites that I have on, like, my bookmarks, and I make sure to check, like, every day to see if there's anything new out there that I'd be interested in. And, again, I look forward to being able to see these type of interviews or these type of discussions in web pages and just kind of go from there.
I'll definitely have to check it out. So, yeah, I mean, definitely, like, it's really interesting. Like, nobody really knows, like, I mean, Shigeru Miyamoto, I mean, everybody's played Super Mario Brothers, but how many people could tell you who created it, who was the father, you know? But everybody could tell you who directed Lord of the fucking Rings, you know? I mean, it's just really that kind of thing where it's, you know, like, these people deserve credit. I mean, people know who makes their music. People know who make their movies, but they don't know who make their games. And that definitely is something that needs more exposure, and who knows, maybe over the years as we get older, maybe that might happen. But, you know, that's definitely very good. I'll have to check that out.
And who did you want to spotlight for this segment?
All right, this one is kind of a quick kind of, it's a friend of mine. He's done some videos with me before. He also has his own website, so I definitely want to give him a plug. It is YouTube, Worth Your Universe HD. His website's thedailygamepad.com. He does a lot of blogs, a lot of gaming videos, Let's Plays and stuff, and just a really great, overall nice guy, really funny, really bizarre, really out there. Sometimes he likes to wear a mask on his face or whatever, but anyways, really great guy. Like I said, he has his own website, Daily Gamepad, where he does reviews and articles and stuff, and definitely check out his content for sure. Like I said, he hasn't talked to Will Wright or anything, but I mean, he does have some really interesting content and a really great guy. He will, like, you comment on his stuff, he'll reply back. So definitely check out, like I said, Worth the Universe HD on YouTube, all one word, and thedailygamepad.com. For his website.
Ah, that's pretty cool. I'll have to check him out as well then. I guess this leads us to our final segment, which it's going to be a quick one, but hopefully in the future, as we get more people listening, it'll be able to become something bigger, and that's our mailbag section where we take questions from listeners and just people about gaming and, I guess, life in general from what I'm seeing at these first couple of questions. The first one, it's from... We'll go ahead and choose, I guess, the one that my friend sent me, and then we'll go with yours.
Okay.
It is from Earl, from Would You Kindly... Oh, man. I'm going to get killed for that one. It's Earl from nerdsontherocks.com. And if you like, if you follow his Twitter, it's GT_NOTR. And I mean, this guy, he's always got something interesting to discuss about, and his website's pretty
cool.
Yeah, we
kind of got this questions on the fly because, you know, usually you don't get questions.
Yeah,
we decided to
film this very last minute today. We were actually just going to do some more plans and figure out how we wanted the show to go. And when we finally got enough,
they were like,
info,
we're
like, well, let's record
live
today.
I had to do the
let's
little...
just do it. Do it now. Let's do it now.
No, fuck it. Do it live.
Do it live. Fuck, I fucked that up. I'm going to get yelled at by the internet.
That's cool.
Anyways, his question, or he has two questions. The first one is, what are your thoughts on Bomberman? And the second one is, what game character would you get to help you hide a dead body? Bomberman, love the series. I haven't played any Bomberman games in forever, but every time I play it, I always have a blast with these games. They're just a lot of fun. So, I mean, I like them. I don't know about you, Adam.
Well, I will say one thing about Bomberman. Pretty damn cool. He blows shit up. Why can't you? He's cute and cuddly, and he shits out bombs. Actually, I do have a funny story about Bomberman. Back when I was taking computer graphic design in, like, when I went to a tech school, I did we had to do, like, a little animation, so I was able to do some cell shading. Can't talk. And made, like, a Bomberman animation. Ugh. And, the Bombermans just shit out bombs, and it's pretty much how they fart, so... Yeah, it was kind of a dumb story, but yeah, anything that shits out bombs is cool in my book. Now, what game character?
And what game character?
Oh, did you?
I would go with Kirby.
Really?
I would go with Kirby, because I think I could trick the little guy into eating him, and I wouldn't have to worry about the body at all. But, choice is to go with Kirby.
It'd be a turd. I mean, it'd be like the body is a piece of shit, like, you know, afterwards. That's what he does. He eats people and he just shits them out.
So, yeah, I definitely eat Kirby. My number one guy. I would go to Kirby for sure.
I really didn't think about this. What game character would you get to help hide a dead body? I gotta think of somebody real quick here. I'm trying to think of something that that has the power to completely destroy the universe. Any Final Fantasy boss near the end of the game when they get their crazy power, because usually they have, like, one attack that, like, completely annihilates everything, like Sephiroth or something, where he's got that attack that he summons, like, this meteor, like, just destroying everything. I mean, not only would you hide the body, you would destroy the planet, and therefore you would kill the police agency. So, therefore, you would be killed too, but, I mean, like, no traces would be left behind. And, hell, who's going to investigate you, because they're all dead. So there you go, Sephiroth.
All right, right on. All right, and what about the other questions we had?
Okay, I'll read one. He sent a video link, but Dan Van Dam on Facebook, and of course, he is also Mr. Worth Your Universe. He asked, "Would you play Super Hunchback for Game Boy?" I watched a little video of it, and I guess if somebody wants to send me a copy, I'll play it.
Yeah, you know, I saw the video of it too. I'd never heard of the game until now, and I was watching it, and I was like, yeah, I would play that. I don't know if I'd be willing to drop more than maybe, like, $2 or $3 on the actual game itself, but if I got a chance to, like, actually play it, I definitely would. It just seems okay. It doesn't seem that bad. The one thing, like, I noticed is there's this one part where he's collecting fruit, and I guess it's, like, a watermelon slice.
Yeah.
That's there, and I'm looking at the sprite, and I was like, is that half a pizza there? Like, what's going on here? But I would play it if I got the game, or if I ran into a copy of the game. I would definitely play that.
All right, we would definitely hit it. I know I got a couple more questions, one's from two people I knew, but Yeah, just pick one of them, I guess. Let's just...
We'll go with, I guess, Nifon from Twitter.
Oh, N1FFAN.
Yeah, N1FFAN. And the question was, what's your favorite food? Hands down, favorite food, ribs.
Ribs, really? I thought you was going to say tacos. Oh, sorry.
No. I see where you went. Tacos are my comfort food, though. I will give you that much. That when
it
I'm just like feeling
home.
Down,
in my,
yeah. like, when I'm feeling down, when I need something to like cheer me up, tacos is like my go-to food. And
but
I was freaking out. I'm sorry.
Ribs is the favorite though.
Oh yeah, ribs is by far the favorite. Tacos would be my comfort food. And like I was saying, I was freaking out because when I first found out I was going to move to New York, someone said, "Oh, you know, they don't have taco trucks in New York," and I started freaking out because I was like, I don't know what I'm going to do. But ever since then, I found out that there are taco trucks. They're not as good as LA stuff, but there are taco trucks out there, so I'm not freaking out.
Or Taco Bell. See, we don't have taco trucks here. We just have this thing called Taco Bell. So.
Oh, you know what's funny about Taco Bell? In Mexico, Taco Bell is advertised as a U.S. fast food.
Nice.
Whereas, yeah, because originally when it first came out, when they first got there, they should. But when it first came out in Mexico, it was just advertised as regular Mexican food, and it didn't do good at all. So when it came out again, they changed it to American food, and then it just became popular.
Yeah, so it's like, hello, welcome to Taco Bell. Would you like a taco, sir? That's my white man voice.
That's pretty good white man voice.
Sir, would you like a chalupa?
Alright, what's your favorite food, Adam?
Okay, this is going to sound cliche. I love pizza. I grew up loving pizza a lot. Love fried chicken. Of course, in the South, growing up with a lot of Southern food, so fried chicken, mashed potatoes, and gravy dumplings, but the dumplings are chicken and dumplings, which, you know, of course, is chicken broth with biscuits and Oz. Yeah, I just love that stuff. Biscuits and gravy. If you live in a part of a country you don't know what biscuits and gravy are, go look it up, especially with sausage gravy. Oh, that stuff is shit. And for a friend, what was his name? Pseudo? Is that how you say it?
Yeah, Pseudo.
At first, I thought it was Pseudo P or something, like PSP. I was like, I don't know. I have misread it. But, I'm sorry. I love animals. They are delicious to me. I'm sorry. And if an animal was to eat me, I'm sure it would not feel bad. He's probably going to hate me now, isn't he?
Oh, yeah. I'm sure your show's going to get pulled off from what you kindly after that one.
Oh, well. Maybe Crash will enjoy it. Until he hears the What Games We Playing segment. He's told me he hates those in podcasts. He turns them off, so he probably won't even make it to this part.
Probably not.
Oh, well. It's our podcast. Screw off,
everybody. We do what we want.
Yeah! All right, I guess I'll read the next one. What do you think of, I guess I'm saying this right, Toho and Bullet Hell games? So, I guess Toho is like the fan-made Japanese games that, from what I'm told, like, kind of like the stuff with Rocket Android and other stuff, because a lot of those weren't those kind of fan-made games that got kind of put out here.
As far as Toho goes, I've never played it before, and it's my first time hearing about it. But I like Bullet Hell shooters. They're a lot of fun. Definitely not something I could play consistently.
No.
But when I sit down and when I play one, I always have a blast, and it's always a real challenge. So I really enjoy them. And that's what Rocket Android did. The first three or four games that they released in the U.S. were all Bullet Hell games, and they were always a lot of fun. So I love them. Again, not something I could play every day, but when I do sit down and play them, they're always a blast. They're always a blast. They're always challenging.
Awesome. I like Bullet Hell games too. I actually went because one of my favorite ones on the iPhone, and I ended up getting a 364. I had import from Europe, and luckily it's region free. Dodonpachi Resurrection. It's one of my favorite. I don't know why I like that one so much. To me, I really could not give you an actual reason, because to me I can't tell much difference between a lot of the games, but Dodonpachi for me, I just love that game. I just love that Bullet Hell shooter for some reason, and I wanted to pick it up on 360, because, you know, I have an arcade stick too, so I would definitely want to play it like that. If anyone could tell me if, for some reason, the European achievements won't work, if somebody actually has it, let me know. But for some reason, I can't get achievements in that game, and I wonder if it's just because it's from another region. But, yeah, it is region-free for U.S., so if you live in North America, and you want to import Dotonpachi Resurrection from Rising Star Games, and that's European, I guess, kind of like an Axis or an Atlas. And I think they're actually going to open up shop here, from what I've heard. You could definitely import it that way through a store or whatever. So get the European copy. It will work in a U.S. system. You can play it. So I can verify that. I cannot verify if you can get achievements to work. For some reason, I can't. But
nice. Well, that pretty much does it for our fan questions and mailbag, just simply because, again, this was a last-minute thing. I think I had to tweet this like 5 times before I only got that
and
one question.
And my internet died like, what, 2 times?
Yeah, 2 times. But that sums it up for the first episode of Shoulder Buttons, and hopefully you enjoyed it. I can't wait to do another one.
I know it's been super long, and then I crashed
out. It's very long, and I'm sure we're probably going to have to re-record the first episode, but I can't wait to see how it turns out.
We're just going to throw it up like it is. We're going to edit it, throw it out there, and let you guys enjoy it. I mean, yeah, there's going to be some minor tweaks here and there to make it sound a little better, but like I said, we like this podcast, like Shoulder Buttons, I want it to be free, I want it to be fun, I want to bring people on that you guys would enjoy, and everybody get to know people. I want this to be a community, I want this to be something where everybody can talk to one another and share thoughts and ideas, and just be ourselves, you know. It's what this is all about. This is not going to be heavy editing. This is not going to be super pro or anything like that, but it's going to be enjoyable. It's going to be fun, and I can't wait to see where it goes from there. But let's go ahead and wrap it up. We've been on this for quite a while, and let's go ahead and, Jose, just tell people where they can find you, where they can get a hold of you, and all that fun stuff.
The easiest way to get a hold of me is Twitter. If you look up A Vicious Koala on Twitter, you'll find me. And that's the easiest way right now to get a hold of me. If you want to email me, it's aviciouskoala@gmail.com. You can send in any questions you have, or if you want to know anything else or whatever, just go ahead and hit me up. Just go ahead and add me on Twitter. I'm always there, and I'll try to be as active as possible when I'm at work, but I gotta hide and sneak away with the phone and go through Twitter every hour or so. But I'm always on there, so feel free to hit me up there at any time. Hopefully soon I will be publicly releasing my own website. I have a few updates to do and a few tweaks to do it, but then you'll be able to reach me through that as well. What about you, Adam?
Okay, well, you can always reach me on my Twitter, @TheGameMachine, and also my YouTube channel. If you like my stuff, subscribe and share it. Definitely like it. I like it when you like me. So just go ahead and go to the youtube.com/transparencypro or @GameMachine on Twitter. You can find me there and reach me there and see all my content there. And, of course, I put my Game Machine episodes on wojcanley.com. Plug for them, guys. So, I mean, they've kind of discovered me and kind of helped me out a little bit. So I kind of feel to kind of share it. And, of course, you can read Jose's stuff on there as well.
Yeah, that's right. You can read most of my news articles there, and like I said, my website should be going public soon, and I can't wait to share that with everyone. So hopefully you guys enjoyed the first episode, and you know, we'll go from there.
Yep. So for me and Jose, till next time, everybody, game on, and see ya. Say bye.
Bye.